Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast. As usual, I'm Matt. I'm the editor-in-chief of digitallydownloaded.net. And with us this week, we've got the full crew. We've got Other Matt. Hello, Other Matt.
Hello, Other Matt.
Yeah, this could go on all day. We got Ginny. Hello, Ginny.
Hi. I'm not Matt.
You're not a Matt? No, you're not a Matt. And we've got Alan, who's also not a Matt.
It was me. I was Matt all along. I was truly the only Matt. It's the end of this. I'm done. All right. Goodbye.
Alan has delusions of being Matt.
it's in general, or like, is this a regular occurrence for me now? Is this the narrative we're pushing?
Well, I just, after that little thing, I just assume that you walk around all day thinking of yourself as a Matt, Alan.
Yeah, I put a little name tag on myself and walk around and be like, hi guys, my name's Alan, but it's actually Matt.
Yeah.
Because that right. Isn't just confusing or dumb or a terrible idea for anyone. Not at all.
All right. Miku music. That'll bring everything down and sane and stuff. And then we'll talk about stuff in the podcast. So we've got a pretty good track this week. Alan hates it, but yeah, that's why he's called Alan and not Matt. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. Okay, so the big news this week, I guess, is not good news. Or for anybody who likes classic JRPGs, is certainly not good news. Square Enix decided to release a remake-ish thing of Chrono Trigger, and it sucked. Surprise, surprise. And yeah, it's basically what they've done is, in addition to throwing in a new dungeon, which I have no idea if it's any good or not, because I haven't played the remake, they've also gone and fixed the sprites and the artwork. And by fixed, I mean actually screwed it up. And they've taken they've taken those lovely pixel designs that were so iconic with the original and then put them through like a smoothing filter or something. And they've all come out like blurry, modern looking sprite work, which is ugly and terrible, and God knows why they even thought they'd do that, especially after they'd already done that with Final Fantasy VI's remake, and nobody liked that either. So I don't know what they're thinking.
I wonder who sat down and made the decision and was like, you know what? Let's just make this look like shit. Like, let's just do it. What'll go wrong? Everyone will love it. Kids will love it. They'll buy it up and they'll think, wow, I just love looking at this blurry mess. That's the future of gaming, everyone, ladies and gentlemen. Buy me money.
It confuses the hell out of me, because if they wanted to be lazy and just throw something out there, just throw the original out. Why go to the effort?
More effort to mess it up. Someone sat down and was like, you know, I'm going to just do this. It's fine. This is going to take me like an hour, but I could go sleep in that hour instead. But this is worth it because I'm going to ruin this game.
That's exactly it. It's like, if you want to modernize it, then that's great. I'm all for modernizing classic games and stuff. Just, you know, get some decent artists to work on the remake and do high definition sprites and stuff. So either, you know, don't do anything and just do the lazy port, or actually do a decent, you know, effort to modernize it with, you know, good graphics, good HD sprites and stuff, or give the game to a developer like WayForward and say, hey, look, here's one of the greatest games of all time, have at it, and they'll do a pretty good job with it, I think. So why Square Enix just did this, I don't know. It's like maybe it's part of their internship program, you know.
Oh my god.
you're just here is your, like, one of our most loved games, ruin it for us, do it.
Well, that's the thing.
Maybe it's like the Senate.
You're out of university, you need a job, Square Enix is hiring, so you go and get a job with Square Enix, and they're like, okay, so your first day on the job, cool, welcome to the company, now go and remake Chrono Trigger. And maybe that's how it works. I don't know.
Maybe they did the same thing with Secret of Mana. I don't know, but they're just like, oh, this is the Square Enix intern program. Everyone just pick a really beloved game and fuck it the hell up. So...
Yeah, you know what? That's a recipe for money right there. Yeah. Step one, collect underpants. Step two, step three, profit. That's how they make their money at Square Enix. It's the big dosh. It's the big... how do you make a mistake that big? You could literally just re-release the original game and everyone would be like, all right, well, this is pretty, like, not...
Well, this is perfect, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, this is also just still, like, a very, very good game. So, like, why? And I... It's the same thing with, like, the HD remakes. Like, I don't know if you remember, but the remake of the trilogy, rather, of Devil May Cry on PS3, nothing was synced with the audio. So you'd watch a cutscene and it'd be like a 3 or 4 second delay of Dante talking. It's like, they had this right on the PS2. And, like, just don't do that. Just do not. It's so easy to just not ruin things.
The thing I find odd about is that Square Enix just seems to really, really, really hate pixels for whatever reason.
I mean, it was a bad movie, to be fair. Had Peter Dinklage in it, though. That was pretty good. He was in Destiny, too.
That is, he was true. Not good in Destiny.
That space wizard came from the moon.
Yeah. But... They really
came from the moon
at a time when, like, pixel art in games is so popular and so beloved.
Yeah, like, that's another thing. It's not like this is an outdated art form. They keep making games. Celeste just came out and is awesome. Like, Into the Breach just came out and is awesome.
Pixels aren't unattractive anyway. I mean, you can throw the original Chrono Trigger on, you know, your Super NES Mini or whatever via hacking. Don't do it, but do it.
We don't support stealing, Matt. Stealing is wrong.
Would you steal a car?
Would you steal a policeman's hat and then shit in it?
But, like, you can do it. I'm not saying you should do it, but you can do it. And, you know, you play the original game on your TV and whatever, and yes, it's got pixels, but it looks good. It's a beautiful game. It's still a beautiful game because it's got that timeless quality to it. So why you would... It's like taking the Mona Lisa and then, you know, cutting it in half or something and then saying, hey, look, we remade the Mona Lisa. It's like...
Make it a holofoil card or something. Be like, no, guys, but you can carry this around in your pocket now. Get around it. Yay.
It's really weird that Square Enix does this because it just makes no sense. It doesn't respect the heritage of the original game, and it doesn't look better. And God knows why they have this issue with Pixels. If they are going to go and remake it, they might as well go all the way and do a full 3D remake thing, but just do a better job than they did with Secret of Mana.
You mean Secret of Blander?
Like, I like what they did with the... I like
Thank
what
you for sandbagging that. Thank you for sandbagging that. I didn't deserve it. I was really struggling for something there, but it didn't come out properly.
I really like what they did with the graphics of the Secret of Mana remake. I thought it was pretty, and it would have worked if it wasn't a remake of a game that people were going to be comparing to, again, one of the best games of all time. So, yeah, if they are going to remake it, then that's okay, as long as they do a good job with the rest of the game. Like, they've done some good jobs with remakes in the past. Like, the Final Fantasy III remake
yes.
was really good. That was really good.
That was way too good, because it had me actually have my hopes up for the rest of Square Enix.
And then they followed it up with the Final Fantasy IV remake, which was also very good.
Yeah. The game's really, really good, actually. I want to play that.
You can do it. You can certainly do it, but just... not the way that they're doing it now. I think those two games, they were outsourced to Matrix Software, weren't they? Matrix
probably
did the remakes, yeah. So maybe that's a thing.
My Final Fantasy 13 remake where everyone is just hair. It's going to be a good day for everyone. It's going to be a really, really good day.
So, yeah, remakes.
Well, if they port a Chrono Trigger to Switch, would anyone buy it? Yes. I don't mean like the port of like the shitty mobile version that has been ported to PC.
Virtual console is not a thing. And
yeah, like either virtual console or like a proper like original port of the SNES game to the Switch. Would you buy it, or would you be like, oh, I've been burned by this before. It could look horrifically shit.
But Ginny, there's a thing called a screenshot. I'm pretty sure you can tell if something looks bad from a cursory look.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess it would depend if they add all the extra stuff as well, right? Like, are they just gonna do like a flat original port, and then they won't have any of the DLC that wasn't the 3DS or the mobile version as well? Like, would that matter to you guys? Like, does it matter? Like, would you rather get the original game ported properly, or like a shittier port with all the extra stuff? Does the extra stuff matter?
No, absolutely not.
It's an old game.
I would genuinely pay a premium to have a direct port of Chrono Trigger on my Switch, because I don't have a portable version of Chrono Trigger anyway. I'm certainly not going to get this travesty on my mobile, on my iPad. So yeah, and it's a great game. It still holds up. It's still well worth playing. You still get, God knows how, 30, 40 hours out of playing it. It's a pretty long RPG. So I don't see any reason why they couldn't throw it there on there as a direct port on the virtual console, and then ask people to pay, you know, 15, 20 bucks for it or whatever.
I mean, that requires Nintendo to actually make the virtual console. I don't think they know what they're doing with that.
I don't know what's up with Nintendo with the Switch. We'll talk about that in the next section. But yeah, the virtual console thing is weird that it's not on there, because it's easy money for Nintendo, and Nintendo's never been adverse to making easy money from old games before.
I'm just very upset that there's no market for like more remasters from the PS1 era, because it would be so, so good to have more games to come out. Like, I know that Medieval's being remade, which is awesome, because that game is way too good to be lost in time. And we just had Crash Bandicoot last year, and that is still one of my semi-regularly played games.
And don't forget, Final Fantasy VII is on Horizon.
That is never coming out, man. Yeah. That's not coming out.
On the horizon might be a bit of a stretch.
Look, that's going to come out when Kingdom Hearts 3 comes out, and that's never happening either.
Well, Spyro's coming out, which is a PS1 game, so...
Well, that's a rumor, but it seems very...
I feel like it's going to happen.
So do I, but I just don't want to mislead any listeners who think
that's right, It's
mislead them all. Everything's coming out.
Spyro is apparently coming out. Apparently. Don't sue me. It's apparently coming out.
I'm suing you right now, Ginny. It's too late.
sue me in internet court, Alan.
I'll sue you for $10 million and then also sue a bunch of random Steam users for $10 million as well.
Sue you for all your bitcoins and...
Yeah.
None of my bitcoins.
Every single one of my non-existent bitcoins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Back on topic.
I almost don't want to say this at the risk of giving Square Enix ideas. But if they released the crappy mobile version on Switch, I'd probably buy it, and I would hate myself, and I'd be very sad.
What have you done, man?
And enjoy it. I would rather have you done a good version. But
have you faced yourself? Da, da, da,
da, right, so basically, thanks to this podcast, not only do we get blacklisted from Square Enix for ripping on Chrono Trigger and Secret of Mana, but now Square Enix is going to release the crappy version of Chrono Trigger on the Switch because Matt gave them the idea to.
And we're all going to buy it.
That's a very bad podcast.
I've already bought it.
but yeah, I mean, if Square Enix is going to keep remaking stuff, and hopefully they can do stuff better, if I can put in an order, I'd like to see Drakengard remade.
Yes.
The original Drakengard.
With combat.
Yeah, since Yoko Taro and Square Enix seem to be buddies at the moment, why not? That would be great. Get Platinum Games involved too to fix the gameplay. Mm-hmm. And people should experience that game. It's a really good one. And I mean, Square Enix has got lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of games it can remake and remaster and stuff. Just fingers crossed.
Like everyone's favorite, King's Knight.
Just hopefully in the future they don't get the interns to do it. That's the main thing, I think. And on that note, we'll go to some music. We'll actually pick some music from Final Fantasy, I think. Chocobo's theme from Final Fantasy IV, because that's a great one. Welcome back, everybody, and as we record this podcast today, it is actually exactly 1 year since the Nintendo Switch was released, so March 3, we're recording the podcast, and March 3 is obviously when the Switch came out last year, and it was a pretty good console when it launched, I think, and I think it's still a pretty good console 1 year later. I think we can all agree on that, right?
No, I hate it. It's a bad console. Bad. Terrible games. Like, it's just got terrible games. It doesn't have, like, some of my favorite games in recent memory at all.
It's only got, like, 5 games on it, right? Like, no one put games on this console.
Yeah, like everyone's favorite Mappy.
Well, that was certainly the case with the Wii U and the 3DS when they launched. They had about 5 games on them for the first year. And, yeah.
The Switch is
a little bit different. The Wii U still has 5 games on it. Yeah, that sounds about right.
3DS got new games eventually.
It did. But yeah, I think Nintendo hasn't had a really, really good console launch for quite a while. So the Switch was a surprise, I guess, in some ways, for a first year to have been so strong. But I honestly can't remember not having the Switch with me when I'm out and about and stuff, because it's good to have basically a home console in your bag and stuff, and play the full console, home console kind of games on when you're out and about. Because with previous consoles, I mean, the Vita even, as powerful as it was at the time, it wasn't up to the scratch of, you know, what the home consoles were doing. So it's all a bit new for the Switch in that regard, and I think people have resonated with that. I think there was stats that said that it was basically most people were using it in handheld mode. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. But also, like, if you're not, what are you doing? Like, the console's built around it. Like,
I've actually lost my dock, so I can't even play it on the TV anymore.
Matt won't dock with me anymore.
So yeah, no.
What?
No. No more docking. No more docking for me.
I didn't find that there was a time when it was practiced in the first place.
All right, we're going to end the podcast right here, guys. Podcast over.
I think I've docked mine once since I got it for about 5 minutes just to see what it was like.
Yeah, same. But I went back to handheld in the end.
Yeah.
Like, it's so convenient. It's not like an uncomfortable console to hold. Like, it's very, very easy to hold with the screen in it. Like, it's not super, super big or anything.
It's not too heavy. It does fit nicely. The only thing I would say is, and I have noticed this with some of the action games, in particular Bayonetta, actually, the little shoulder button, not the trigger, the other one, R and L.
Yeah.
On the console. They're a little bit small, hard to reach, especially when you're also trying to manipulate the camera, because the design of the right hand side of the controller doesn't really work so well for me. But that only really applies to first person shooters and stuff, and who cares about that crap?
I don't know about you guys, but I still don't really have Wi-Fi on a regular area. So if I try to play a game online, it doesn't really work anymore. So I play Switch games so I can play Switch games. Not really, like, you know, AAA, I'm gonna shoot the boys games.
What impression was that?
What?
What kind of impression, what kind of exit were you trying to do there? Like, what kind of...
Cool bro.
Yeah, this is cool bro. That was a very good
cool bro. A regular cool bro dude, you know. I play Drawn to Life, I mean to Death, on a regular basis.
Alan, Drawn to Life was a very nice platformer.
Yeah, and you shoot bros in it.
No,
it's
that's Drawn to Death.
No, it's fine. They're both...
What is going on right now? Anyway, Drawn to Death.
I mean, it's Fever Dream, I'm sorry.
Thankfully not on Switch, because if it was, I'd probably buy it and play it and hate myself.
No, what is wrong with you?
So let's talk about games that are on Switch.
This is too soon. We need to back down on this for a bit. Give it like another couple of months and then come back with like teeth out.
Anyway, the Switch is a great console.
Switch doesn't have Drawn to Death on it, so it's a great console.
Yeah,
doesn't have Drawn to Death.
It's got Sonic games in it. It's got Bayonetta on it, two of my favorite franchises. Mm-hmm. So
I'm not sure if you're being serious or not with the Sonic thing anymore.
I am being serious, okay? I'm like committed. I'm committed to my brand, Alan. Don't let me down now.
Is this your brand?
Yes. Sonic. I don't know. Somewhere along the way this year, I've become related to Sonic and Bayonetta as my mom. I don't even know what's happening anymore.
Have you become related to a hedgehog?
Well, it's because Dante is Bayonetta's husband, apparently, according to Matt, and then they had Sonic, who was their son.
How does that work?
I don't know. I'm not...
There is, like, a demon boy. That doesn't equal hedgehog, actually, it should.
I'm not, like, a biologist, okay? This is just the DDNet canon. But all I'm trying to say is that some of the franchises that are nearest and dearest to my heart, and apparently my fantasy genealogy, are on the Switch, which is what makes it so good.
Fantasy genealogy.
Yeah, which is what makes it so good.
Genealogy.
Oh, God. I'm sorry, we lost the plot.
I'm so sorry.
The Switch also has great games like Golf Story.
Yeah,
it does. And lots of really great little indie games. Lots of them.
Yes.
So many of them. Too many of them. Like, it's getting hard to actually keep up with the releases.
And Shovel Knight and Puyo Puyo Tetris and Shovel Knight again, because there's like three different Shovel Knight games now, and they're all really, really good.
And SteamWorld Dig.
Yes.
Yes.
SteamWorld is great. Yeah, SteamWorld and...
I saw something recently that... And I don't know, this is probably old news, but it's Switch is the fastest selling console ever in Japan. Like, fastest.
Yeah, I've heard.
PlayStation 2, which is...
That's insane.
Insane.
That doesn't surprise me at all, actually, because the Japanese do like, traditionally anyway, they've liked the handheld consoles more than we have in the West, and that fits with their culture and the way that they kind of live their lives, and the fact that they don't actually have much time at home, so they spend a lot of time out and about, so having a handheld console is a good thing for them. So for Nintendo to actually offer basically a similar experience to what you'd get if you had a PS4, but on the go is a pretty amazing thing. So I'm not surprised it sells well in Japan at all. Yeah. I'm actually looking forward to, because when I went to Japan last year, the Switch was only a couple of months old. So there weren't so many of them out and about in the wild, but I'm sure when I go back this year for Tokyo Game Show and whatever, they'll be everywhere.
Oh, it's going to revolutionize every single convention, because it means that you like are okay with waiting in a line for 5 hours.
Yeah, all of a sudden you can line up for Monster Hunter, the 3.5 hour long lineups that they have for that game at Tokyo Game Show. And then you can actually play your Switch while you're there waiting, which is good. Your battery will run out by the time you get to the front of the line.
And you can recharge it at a Switch charging port thing that Nintendo is obviously going to provide, because they're not stupid. Nintendo, do it.
That's definitely...
A portable battery would be nice for the Switch. Nintendo should really get onto that.
Or like a Monster Hunter game, please.
So essentially what we've asked for here is a battery and Monster Hunter.
And yes. A Tatsumi Miku game. That's the one thing I'm very upset.
That's Alan, okay. We can live without that, I feel.
This is my turn now. Alan, be quiet. I'm actually really surprised that there hasn't been a Hatsune Miku game announced on the Switch yet. But then I realized that I don't know if Sega's still got the license for Hatsune Miku. Because
I don't think Sega knows either.
because Dejica Games has the VR one coming out on PC soon. And that would suggest to me that whatever license Sega had for Hatsune Miku, they don't have anymore. So whether they actually get to release a game on Switch or not is up in the air, and Dejica Games probably won't. So that whole license is in limbo at the moment, which is very disappointing and very distressing to me, because I really want Hatsune Miku on the Switch, on the go.
So do I.
With that wonderful screenshot button just there, easy to press, and then easy to upload to Twitter just to annoy Alan.
And then easy just to mute Matt.
She needs to have a Sonic costume as well. The sexy Sonic tracksuit. That's what the game needs.
She has one.
Yeah, well, it's got to be in the Switch game. It's mandatory. Yeah. It should be the only costume she's allowed to wear.
It's the only costume I haven't unlocked, Ginny.
On purpose.
On purpose.
It in protest. In the night.
In protest. This is my protest against Sega for doing that.
I want to see the Persona dancing games on Switch.
Yes.
And absolutely. Also just like all rhythm games, because... Rhythm games are best on a handheld, in my experience. And Switch already has a couple of great ones, but more is always good.
I know that this is completely under, like, just no one's interest at the moment or ever. But, low-key, Just Dance on the Switch is probably the best way to play that game, because of the way that the Joy-Cons work.
Yeah.
It's so good, and would absolutely recommend it if you're interested in remotely in like dancing or having a party game or something like that. It is so much fun. It's so much fun, and like again, you look like an idiot, but it's gonna be great.
Does it work the same as the Wii and Wii U ones did with the Wiimotes?
Yeah, so you can hold one Joy-Con in your hand and you can have more players, or you can do two Joy-Cons with both hands.
Yeah.
And then you can be like a cool dude, you know? Dance to Animal by Martin Garrix on repeat for like 7 hours. As you should. It's the future of technology.
I don't even know what that song sounds like, but sure.
Yeah, the other thing I really want to see on Switch...
You guys are old.
...is Virtual Console.
Yes. It's never happening. It's already a ghost.
That is. There are so many great games that are somewhat lost in time, but not really, but any chance to play them again on the convenience of a especially the convenience of a handheld one, because I was one of those, probably lots of people, who never bought a new 3DS because I was fine with my old 3DS. But then that meant I never got to play any of the Super Nintendo Virtual Console games because
and that's
I decided not to do that.
I mean, I'm really surprised that Nintendo hasn't done the Virtual Console for the Switch yet. Perhaps the reason is that they're holding on that for the subscription online service that they've been promising. So when it becomes a paid model thing, you sign up and you get Virtual Console games to play and stuff. I know that was the plan. So yeah, they might be holding. They might well be holding everything to do with Virtual Console until that happens, which is fine, I guess. But I hope that it's more than just Super NES and before stuff.
I want my Game Boy games back again.
Yeah.
I want GameCube on it. I know all GameCube games work because the GameCube has the analog shoulder buttons, which the Switch doesn't. So any GameCube game that uses the analog controls won't work. But there's an awful lot of GameCube games that would, and I think I would like to play those again, like the Fire Emblem on the GameCube, which was the best Fire Emblem.
Path of Radiance.
That didn't have Lin in it.
Who do you fight for? I fight for my friends.
Baton Katos would be great.
That was a weird card game, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a really obscure JRPG by the guys that did the Xenoblade Chronicles games before they got bought out by Nintendo. Lost Kingdoms, which was a card game series by From Software before they went and became super big because of Demon Souls and Dark Souls and stuff. That was a great one. So there's an awful lot of GameCube games that I would really love to see, and they just haven't put them on anything, any virtual console beforehand. So the Switch would be a good opportunity for that, I want to think, I hope.
From what I understand, for whatever reason, emulating GameCube is really hard.
Yes, because it's a dolphin. You can't really steal a dolphin's bones and make a console.
Nintendo is a very big company, Matt. Nintendo really wanted to.
That's what I mean.
For those of you who don't understand that joke, the GameCube was originally codenamed the Dolphin. So that's. It wasn't a good joke, but I thought I'd explain it anyway because I felt bad about it.
Yeah.
If you have to explain a joke, Alan, it's not a very good joke.
But that's good. Also. Nintendo 64 games and Game Boy Advance games, all those, which they did do a few virtual console releases for those on Wii U,
but nobody
which
had
was great, but nobody had a Wii U, and also having them on an actual handheld console would be better.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are so many games there that I would happily pay lots of money to play again without having to go the old piracy route.
some of the Wii games as well, if the ones that don't require the motion controls, they'd be good too. I mean, you can play Chocobo Mystery Dungeon with a standard controller, so just throw that on the Switch too, please. That would be good. Fragile Dreams. There's a couple of Wii ones that I would imagine could work on the Switch without having to have the light bar set up and stuff. So,
well, surely any of those could work by using the Joy-Cons and the Just Dance style. Whatever they did to make Just Dance work, they could probably do with Switch. You wouldn't really be able to play it in handheld mode, but
I don't think Just Dance actually has the controllers interacting directly with the screen. Or wait, maybe it does.
It's got like IR sensors, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if the Switch can do that,
technology confuses and scares me.
If the Switch can do all of that stuff so much, they better put the Wii games on there as well. Just put everything on there, Nintendo. That's what we want.
Just every game is now available on Switch.
Yeah, exactly.
Streets of Rage 2. Let's go, boys.
Yeah.
Actually, while they're at it, they should also probably do some PlayStation Virtual Console and Xbox, original Xbox, I'm sure could work on it. So, just throw everything on there. Don't worry about the legalities.
Forget the Telegraphic 16.
Lost Odyssey on Switch.
Yeah, exactly. It's just throw everything on there. Yeah. Just everything.
There you go.
Ignore the lawyers. The lawyers, they don't know anything. Just do it. And on that note, very good, Smash.
They don't know anything. Nintendo, who's made an incredibly successful console. What a bunch of morons.
Yeah. We'll go to some music. Happy Switch-iversary, Nintendo, and stuff. And hopefully the next year is as good for the console as the last. And we've got some music from Castlevania Symphony of the Night this time around.
Another game that should be on Switch.
And welcome back, everybody. Okay, for the last section of the podcast this week, we're going to talk about Bayonetta as our in-depth into one particular game, because Bayonetta came out recently on the Switch as part of the Bayonetta plus Bayonetta 2 pack and all that jazz. It's been around for quite a while now. It's also on, PC and PS3 and...
Xbox 360,
not that anybody cares about that console. Wii U, it's basically everywhere, and... Hopefully most people who are listening to the podcast have actually played that one, because, yeah, it's obviously been very highly recommended over all that time.
If they haven't, Matt, what is Bayonetta?
Yeah, well, Bayonetta is basically like Devil May Cry, but good.
Wow.
Okay, no.
Are you saying Bayonetta is not good, Alan?
It's like Devil May Cry, but Dante has titties.
Well, Ginny went there. Basically... Basically, yeah, it's an action adventure game thingy that's big on the action, with lots of acrobatics and stuff and lots of gunplay, and it is quite, it resembles, in terms of the way it plays, it does resemble Devil May Cry, but it has a very, very different character and very different plot, obviously. Bayonetta is a woman for a start, and Dante is maybe not, we're not quite sure.
He's a cool dude who doesn't expect authority.
But yeah, she's a very strong, sexy woman is the best way to put it, I guess. She's been controversial. Bayonetta has been controversial over the years because, you know, lots of crotch shots as you're playing Bayonetta, actually.
It's not a game you can really play out and about, because you look like an actual insane person.
Yeah. It's not any worse than playing Doom out and about.
Yeah, but I wouldn't play Doom out and about to begin with as well, because, like, if some kid is, like, sitting next to me on a train, I don't want them to be like, oh, wow, you just tore out that person's heart and then ate it.
So dope!
I also wouldn't want them to be like, oh, wow, you're riding that horse demon. I think that's a good thing.
Anyway, putting aside,
stays in the home.
Putting aside Alan doesn't.
Jesus.
Putting aside what Alan does and doesn't do at home and out and about. She's been an interesting character that has generated a lot of discussions. I subscribe to the view that she's actually very empowered, not exploited, which is basically the two sides of the discussion. She's very good at being very confident in her sexuality, I think is the best way to put it. And yeah, she just comes across as too empowered and too strong and too above everybody else within the game. Like, everybody else in the game is basically an idiot, and she's just she's that much better. So yeah,
it's not just that she's empowered, it's her sexuality is her power, and she carries that and owns that and just loves it. And I think that is
she loves it. She's so around herself, but like in a way that means that she has power over everything that she does.
Yeah, it doesn't come across as like a bunch of creepy old men being like, "Ooh, let's make a sexy character so that we can all just." I won't continue the sentence. You know where that was going. but it does very come across as in the game as it being part of her character and something that she.
Yeah, she comes across as very in control, doesn't she? Like,
she's, yeah,
everything that goes on in those games is basically on her, and she, you know, she's basically immortal. She's you know, ridiculously powerful, and everything she does is so controlled that it's impossible for her sexuality not to be part of that control that she has over everything around her. And yeah, it's rare, I think, in video games for that kind of characterization to happen. Especially since, you know, in a lot of cases it is men making sexy characters for, you know, trowel the sentence off there.
yeah, I think it's quite interesting as well for me personally as a woman that you often have like this dichotomy where female characters that are designed by men kind of either fall into the damsel category or like the real hard ass, I don't need anyone and I have no feelings and I'm a sex monster category. Like, do you know what I mean? But I could have worded that better, but like,
they often, the best way you could have explained that, Jimmy.
There's often this feeling that an empowered, strong woman has to give up traits that some men associate with being a woman, like the ability to be caring and motherly and stuff like that, whereas I think Bayonetta very clearly is able to have both, and that is what I think makes her feel like a character who is designed with empowerment in mind and not just sexual gratification, because she clearly is a strong kick-ass woman, but she's not devoid of any of the traditional traits that people might associate in the past, at least, with femininity or like women being weak and emotional. Like, she can harness all aspects of her being and come out on top. So that's what I like about Bayonetta.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of, I mean, she's a very subversive character in that way, that she does constantly defy expectations, I think, of what we have going into games and what we know about how games are made and how characters are designed and all that kind of stuff. She's very good at kind of turning all of that on its head. And that's why she's such a memorable character. And it's not the only area that Bayonetta is a very, it's not just in sexuality that she's very subversive. She's also, I mean, the other big thing that is controversial in certain circles with Bayonetta is the way it depicts religion, because it tends to, I mean, it kind of flips that on its head as well, where, you know, your angels and stuff are not good.
Yeah.
And and you are playing as a witch who literally kills God. So yeah, it flips that around as well. And one of the things I found so fascinating about Bayonetta the first time, and I just, you know, I've appreciated it ever since, and every time I see it, you know, impresses me, is the way that they've designed the angel characters, which are the enemies that you fight, to be very, they're still kind of glistening in white, and, you know, they still look very angelic, but they're just slightly tweaked, so they also look quite horrific.
It's the porcelain doll look.
Mm.
And that's horrifying, to be quite honest.
And it's just, it's like there's slight things that are odd, like the slight oddnesses about the way the arm is designed or the size of the head of a character or something about them is just really off-putting. And that is despite the fact that they, in every other way, kind of look like the angels that you would see from a religious painting. So,
like, a lot of really cool little details they put in as well. I don't know if you've actually looked at this, but the language that the angels speak is actually constructed by John Dee, the advisor to one of the queens, I believe. But he made angelic language, and they use that language as the basis for all the angels speaking in Bayonetta, which is so, so cool. So you can actually translate them. And it's like really small, cool little details like that you just wouldn't notice otherwise.
Yeah, but, I really like that. Cool.
I thought for a moment there, Alan, I thought you meant like Platinum Games hired this guy to create the language.
They hired John Dee for
specifically for Bayonetta, this guy who was an advisor to the Queen. Which would be pretty impressive.
Yeah, they found a way to... Camille went back in time with his sunglasses and was like, I'm too speedy for you. You will come with me.
But yeah, I mean, all of that kind of comes together to make this... It's a game that kind of also explores certain hypocrisies about religion and all of that kind of stuff, which is... It's obviously going to be controversial for certain people when you play it, but it's really... You know, you go into Bayonetta or you go into any kind of action game just expecting, you know, a lot of dumb fun. And then this one is quite the opposite. It's a game that if you, I mean, you can enjoy it on that level if you want to, but if you then, you know, sit down and think about it, there's a lot of depth to it. And the storytelling is actually quite complex. And it's, yeah, that for me was what really hooked me into it.
Well, the story is absolutely not what hooked me into it because the gameplay is awesome. And like, the immediate gratification of learning combos and just destroying everything is so much fun in those games. And if you've ever played a Platinum Games game before, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about because, oh dear Lord, some of the set pieces are some of the coolest things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, like, I'm quite terrible at the combat system. I generally just play it on easy.
Which is fine. Feeds
very nicely into something I was going to say. Is I think one of the things I really like about Bayonetta, and I think a lot of people do, is it from a game design sort of perspective, is it's a type of game, and you think back to Devil May Cry and all these other sort of games that came before it, that are quite known for their difficulty and their challenge, and that's what is appealing about a lot of those sort of games. And I mean, you go back and play the early Devil May Cry games, even if you play it on whatever the easiest setting is.
Oh, it's still impossible.
They are still very difficult games. Bayonetta came along and has that same sort of appeal, and if you want it to be, it's really hard. But they found a way to make the easy and very easy difficulties that are basically a lot more approachable and accessible, even if you're not good at action games, while at the same time you can still just do lots of really cool stuff. You don't feel like the game is talking down to you because you decided to play it on easy. You just press buttons and kill angels and do lots of really cool stuff. And I think that is in a lot of ways, I think Bayonetta pushed that kind of more approachable design or a design that it can appeal to a much wider spectrum of players, whatever you kind of want from the game. And I mean, you've seen that since then in like games like Nier Automata, which if you want to, you can basically let the game play itself. And I think that's been a really good outcome of that.
Hmm. It's a good game.
Yeah. I mean, Bayonetta for me wasn't a game that I felt like I had to play it on a difficult setting. That feels very optional because, you know, the way that the narrative is designed and the characters are designed and all of that stuff, it still feels appropriate to the game if you're just cruising through easy, slaughtering everything, because that's basically what, you know, Bayonetta does anyway in the narrative. So if you're up the difficulty, then it's more a personal challenge that you want to kind of engage with and enjoy the complex combat system that Platinum Games has pulled together, which is good, and it's great that it's there. So, for me, it's great that they've been able to develop this game that still works across all difficulty levels, but remains true to, you know, the vision of what the story they were trying to tell. That's for me where it's a bit different to a game like, we always talk about this when we talk about difficult games, but, you know, for Dark Souls compared to Bayonetta, Dark Souls for me is a game that, and I know we've had this conversation offline in the past, Matt, but for me, Dark Souls doesn't kind of work as an easy game. If there was an easy mode, it would lose some of its thematic strength. But Bayonetta, it doesn't. And that's what I like.
Because Bayonetta is presented as a really powerful character from the beginning.
Yeah.
Whereas you're presented in Dark Souls as like a weak little boy. Quickly get punched in the face by demons. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, Dark Souls feels like it's a game where, you know, if you beat it, that's against the odds, because the odds are meant to be stacked against you. That's the whole point of the game. Whereas Bayonetta, the odds are meant to be in Bayonetta's favor from the outset.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good game. It's a really fun game. If you haven't played it before and you want to play it on Switch, do it. It's a really good port from what I've seen.
Yeah, and then, get both one and two. Cause...
Yes, grab the second one too, because it's even better.
Play them like one first. Play them in order. Person. That's the best way to experience it, I think.
Yeah.
Mm.
I do agree that you should play them in order because you can, and the narrative does follow on in the second from the first. So, yeah, you'll enjoy the second one more probably, but you should play the first one. And then that'll get you nice and set up for the third, which I'm sure will be an amazing game when it comes out. I don't know. Later this year, early next year? What's the plan for it? I don't remember.
TBA.
Ah, right. When Platinum Games can be bothered, basically.
Yep.
Yeah.
When they stop working on Nier Automata 2 or something.
I think they're all just sitting around and drinking wine at the moment.
Probably. They deserve a break. They work pretty hard.
Camille's just drinking heavily.
I think they work pretty hard anyway. I'm sure they do over there. They seem like a pretty
good bunch. Yeah.
All right. So on that note, we will wrap it up for the week. Thanks very much for listening. We'll pick some music from Bayonetta to finish. Why not? That works.
Fly into the moon.
And it's not actually going to be the music, it's just Alan singing it, so...
No, do Moon River.
Upon the stars.
Da, 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 da. Can we just put, like, the beat from Bayonetta's thing behind Alan singing? And just, like, speed it up by, like, five times.
Yeah, I'll, like, change my voice so that it's, like, octave. Like, I'll go up, like, four octaves.
Yeah, so that's that. Thanks very much for listening, everybody, and we'll see you at the next podcast.
Classic Squeenix. More like shit.
I feel like you've just lost the plot this morning. You sound very angry.
Me?
Alan, yeah, he's permanently angry. He's got bunnies around him.
Yeah, look, I got attacked by a guinea pig this morning, so I just, like, have no patience for anything anymore, I've decided.
Why did a guinea pig attack you?
He's a piece of shit.
Were you trying to do something nefarious
because
to
he's
it?
Alan.
I was trying to give him, like, fucking life outside of his cage.
Okay.
He buried himself in his fucking newspaper, and I had to dig him out of the newspaper, and there was shit in the newspaper. Fucking sucked ass. Fuck animals. Animals are bullshit. We should just kill them all.
Oh, And we did record that, Alan.
Did we actually?
Save that soundbite. Yes, we did. It's recording. I'm going to save that soundbite. And next time you piss me off, I'm going to tweet it out with like an @Peter as well, just so that.
Oh, look, you can come for me. I'll fuck them off. I'll just hold bones with me at every point. Just throw them at them. It'll be like a Marowak.
Oh, my God.
No, but actually, that's seriously, fuck animals. They're bullshit.
I think we're going. So let's do this. Before it goes too far, Alan telling us to fuck our animals and stuff.
I didn't tell you to fuck your animals. I told you that animals should get fucked.